Everybody, welcome to the In and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett.
Good evening, friends.
And today we're not going to do news. Instead, we are going to do two finales before we do the trailer watch party tomorrow. So that's finale for Dead Dead Demons, Dead Dead Destruction, as well as the finale for Yatagarasu.
Bird Show!
Plus premiere of Uzumaki. So for all of you that don't know, Uzumaki isn't airing yet. It premieres on the 28th, probably technically the 29th, at midnight on Adult Swim, and then we'll go up on HBO Max. But I got a screener, and the embargo for episode one reviews lifted at 9 a.m. today, so I'm allowed to talk about it. James hasn't seen it.
I have not, but I'm very interested to hear all about it.
I'll just be talking about episode one and hopefully can answer like any questions that you have off the top. Temper your expectations a little bit. At least that was my takeaway. That might end up being a controversial opinion because I'm very picky, even when it comes to horror. Like
We got high standards when it comes to horror in animation, which is very difficult to do.
It is. Just some preliminary information. So this is the Uzumaki anime. It's directed by Hiroshi Nagahama, who also did Flowers of Evil, Mushishi. Those are probably his best known titles to U.S. audiences. It's only supposed to be four episodes, and it's based on Junji Ito's classic manga, which has previously been adapted into a live action movie I haven't seen, but I've heard is not fantastic. Junji Ito's track.
So there's so much you can do with the spirals in live action.
Yeah. Especially for the time period that it came out. It was like early 2000s.
Yeah.
Was
it like digital kind of like book to
I've never
too?
Seen it, but
I watched it way back when I first started getting into Junji Ito.
Yeah.
And I don't remember much other than I thought it looked weird. Like,
yeah.
It just looked weird. And that didn't make it very
scary. Okay. So, like, straight off the top, this is definitely the better Junji Ito anime. Folks are asking in the chat about whether it's better than Junji Ito Collection. Yes, it's better than Junji Ito Collection. You know, any...
It's not very hard, unfortunately.
It's not very hard. The animation is amazing. There's definitely, like, some CG rotoscope sort of stuff going on. So it's very fluid. It looks great throughout. Colin Stetson of Hereditary did the soundtracks. The soundtrack is really, really good. Really good. So I can tell you off the top, animation, it looks amazing. Sounds amazing. My issues are actually with some of the choices to condense the narrative. So now,
first of all, it's four episodes. Are they just standard 22 minute?
They are standard 22 minutes. So they're not like an hour.
I was hoping for at least like an OVA 30, you know?
Yeah,
so that
would
have been like a nice bet.
So up here on screen, this is Shuichi's dad. So the main two characters, if you haven't read the manga, the main two characters of Uzumaki are Kyurie, who she is actually like the perspective character, the protagonist, more or less, everything that you're learning about. She's narrating these stories to you. The manga and the anime kind of opens with the idea that like she's looking back on these strange events that occurred in her town and is telling you about them, right? And her boyfriend, Shuichi, they've been dating since middle school. He lives in town, but he goes to high school outside of town. So he takes the train back and forth. And immediately, the issue with Shuichi is his dad, who I just showed, has become obsessed with spirals. He's collecting spirals, things that have spiral patterns like kimono and things like that. Just like weird spiral objects, all that sort of stuff. So, and that's all he talks about to the point where it's causing issues between his parents. And it's starting to kind of, Shuichi's kind of going the way, has anyone ever seen Jim Carrey in 23? Did you ever see that?
Oh, the number 23? Yeah. Why would you unlock that memory for me? Why would you? Oh my God. I just had like a legitimate, for a brief second, I was like 13 years old. Getting super stoked about my favorite actor being in an R-rated scary movie directed by Joel Schumacher. Why does that name sound familiar? No matter. Probably not a big deal.
Well, I've also seen the number 23. I was a little bit older, but it was still probably for the exact same reasons that you did. Shuichi is experiencing a similar like state with spirals now that his dad's gone off the deep end. He swears there's something wrong with the town that they live in, that spirals are everywhere. There's, you know, little like gust devils, dirt devils that go through town. There's spirals in the water. There's spirals in the clouds. There's spirals in the, it's a like an ocean front sort of small town. So spiral in the waves.
Spirals in a girl's skulls.
Yeah, eventually. Yes. So he's freaking out. And while he initially seems like, you know, he's completely off his rocker, Kyrie comes to find that, like, no, something's really going on here, because Shuichi's dad eventually dies, in that he climbs inside of a large like basin like tub that he orders and just somehow manages to curl his entire body, including his bones or whatever, into a spiral inside of it. And that kind of starts setting things off, and then more spiral like death events start happening to other
people. That is maybe the least tame, and again, I haven't seen the show.
Yeah.
Just speaking of the source material, that's like the least weird spiral related death that occurs in this show. The fact that a man manages to twist his own body into a little cinnamon bun and then shove himself into a pot. That is like as normal as it gets.
So that's the plot synopsis. And that, unfortunately, that's not all. Episode one covers the first three chapters, more or less.
Okay, so because I just read Uzumaki like a couple months ago. Let me see if I can remember. That's Pot Spiral.
Yeah.
Is that
Everything with the dad, which kind of...
Everything with the dad. And then the mom with the ear. Right.
But that part is cut. So that's not in the first episode. I don't know if they intend to move that into later episodes, but it does. The first episode does omit the stuff that starts going on with Shuichi's mom. So they are playing with the timeline a bit.
I mean, they would have had to for only four episodes. It's a thick... I wish I had
it. Yes, I have it. I actually have it right here. Yeah. Do you want me to grab it?
Yeah, it's...
Okay. I think the cord will even reach.
It's a thick book. There's a lot, and it's a very episodic manga. And so it makes sense that there are just some, like, there are some stories that I instantly can imagine them cutting. Versus, they're not going to need this one. They're not going to need
there's,
this one.
There's going to be part, you can see his dad's actually right
there.
Yeah,
right
there,
look
on
that.
The inside cover.
Look at that.
So, I mean, there's going to be, there's 19 chapters from start to finish. So they're definitely going to just probably cut some stories out of here, which is fine. But so the first two chapters, that covers the stuff with Shuichi's parents. But again, the stuff with his mom is not included in episode one. And then chapter three is the scar. So that's the classmate.
Right. Yeah.
The classmate of Kyrie's. She's got this crescent shaped scar on her head that she claims has sort of been a good luck charm in love, and it makes boys fall in love with her and everything. And
it's a normal thing to think.
Yeah. And then, you know, it starts spiraling, and you might recognize the art from it. You guys, if you're familiar with Uzumaki, they put that girl on a t-shirt and everything. So it's
probably the most, that and the spiral dad are probably the most famous panels from
the
manga.
I would think so. I was trying to remember if the snail girl is just a Junji Ito story or if she's in this.
There's a snail person. I don't want to say more.
Yeah.
Because again, I don't know what they are or aren't going to adapt. But
yeah. There's a chapter called The Snail. And I think he's appeared on some merchandise and stuff too. But yeah, definitely the stuff in the early chapters are probably the most famous. So getting into like sorry guys, I'm bisexual. I sit like this. So you just have to like put up with the fact that my knees are always like doing something weird. Like I said, everything looks great, sounds great. Sound effects are even like really good as far as like the squishy, like gross noises.
Good. And you need the sound effects for a Junji Ito.
I think what is holding this up from being perfect, and what gives me some trepidation about how it will play out, is that first episode did feel like a speed run. Like they were speed running things. There isn't that sort of anxiety-inducing buildup to dread that leads to a horrific reveal.
Well, that's the thing with horror anime in general.
They don't do that.
Well, I mean, it's really hard to do in 20 minutes. Not impossible. The best anime horror, my go-to example, though, is Shiki.
Mm-hmm.
And with Shiki, the thing about anime horror is that I've never found any of it to be viscerally scary in the same way that like scenes from Hereditary or Midsommar, right? Yeah. Where like I actually like, you know, curl up in my seat or like, you know, I want to close my ears because I'm afraid of the jump scare. That never happens to me in animation. But the good horror, you can get to that like pit of your stomach kind of dread.
Yeah.
And with Shiki, that's one of the shows that I think does it really well. But it's because it's like a 24 episode anime and it takes like 20 of those episodes to get to, you know, the real, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens, obviously it's about vampires, but it's like in the final, like handful of episodes, you're just like white knuckling, like, oh my God, this is, it's just a catastrophe from every angle. And that kind of horror, I think works really well. But I mean, like you said, in 22 minutes, especially if you essentially have two, like 10 minute stories is really what we have. It's just not a lot of time.
I mean, the dad, they're cremating the dad by the 10 minute mark. So like, that's how fast that stuff is going.
Yeah.
Because I checked. Yeah. So it's, and I agree with you that the buildup tends to be missing in these stories. And I was trying to think, I was like, is this a me problem? Because I'm too used to watching like prestige television where each episode is like 40 minutes long and they're not afraid to like really like draw you out. But I mean, four episodes is, it's like an hour and 20 minutes. So
it's like a 90-minute feature.
Yeah, it's like a 90-minute feature. And I was like, if this had been maybe plotted more like a 90-minute feature, as well as like how they did the pacing for everything, you would probably not get anything really, any of those like iconic images until at least the end of episode two. I feel like the first episode should have been making you wonder, kind of like hinting at what was developing before like the
point. Or at the very least, save the dad. I mean, that's again, that's like a legendary Ito jump scare panel.
Right.
That's like end episode one, you know?
Yeah.
That's like you build to that. You really dig into the eeriness, the dread, just the abnormality of what's going on. As I've gotten older and as I've read a lot more Junji Ito, I still think he's a genius, but it's a lot easier for me to recognize his shortcomings as a storyteller.
Oh yeah,
Because when I first started
reviewing his manga for the site, like subsequential volumes that Viz released, I started to get more.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
it's like when you've read like every Stephen King novel up to a point and you're like, okay, like on the one, I respect your game because I've read 25 of your books, but also I know when you're kind of phoning it in a bit. with Ito, he's so good at the pacing, individual moments. And with short stories, usually the general pacing of a story, which is why I think Uzumaki works at its most episodic. But when it comes to like the long form storytelling, not his strength.
Yeah.
And even in that first chapter of Uzumaki, I remember wishing, I wish we had like five more pages before the dad just goes totally bug nuts.
So I reread the first three chapters after watching the episode, because I hadn't revisited the manga in a while, to kind of give me a sense of like what was moved around, you know, what are they having to do? Because another issue with the speed running feel is that there's a couple parts where the sense of like time doesn't really make sense. So in the manga, we're not introduced to the girl with the scar, not introduced to her until episode three. She doesn't appear at all.
Yeah. She just drops in.
She just drops in, and they do that. Like a lot of the chapters after this do that. A new kid at the school and then something horribly bad happens to them.
Well, there's one chapter where like Kyrie, like she has like a friend who's like, we've been best friends forever. And like, I'm like, you literally have not shown up until like chapter 12.
Yes.
Like, you haven't even been here.
Yeah. Where were you? Yeah. So the girl with the scar, her name's Azami. Right. And so, they do move some things around to kind of get Azami in there sooner.
Okay. And that's something I can see.
Whereas like in the manga, you know, she doesn't start fixating on Shuichi until both of his parents are dead. And he's trying to like reconcile that. He's not having a good time. Shuichi is not having a good time. But because they introduce her sooner and try to like get her deal going on at the same time that Shuichi's parent stuff is going on, the part where she gets fixated on him, it's like she meets him at the train station in the anime. Again, they meet in a different place in the manga, but they meet at the train station and, you know, he he rebuffs her, and she's not used to that because guys instantly fall in love with her because of her scar or whatever. And it is like a matter of minutes until she's like confronting him and being like, I can't stop thinking about you. Yeah. And it doesn't make any sense.
No, like you don't buy, well, you don't buy it emotionally.
No, you don't buy it emotionally at all. And I'm like, this plot beat would work, but you needed to move it at least later in the series, which is again why I kind of wish this was the plot pacing was more like, you know, a beginning arc into, you know, a denouement sort of like big reveal.
I think what they would have needed to do is take some of those key moments. And like you said, I could even imagine them introducing her episode one.
Yeah, absolutely. Then, it's just a classmate that Curie talks to or something.
But then
right?
we don't get the climax of that story to like episode three, you know?
Right. Four, yes.
Right. Like really, but again, I can see why they're, it's weird because most manga does not like to deviate from the source material or a lot of anime adaptations don't.
Yeah.
And I'm usually in favor of when shows are willing to cut things and rearrange things to, you know, to fit the medium. But like you said, when we're working with such a tight deadline, it almost seems like they maybe needed to be even more drastic with the changes they made.
That's kind of the feeling that I got, is like they needed to sort of pick out a couple of the spiral stories and have those sort of weaving together towards a big ending when you've only got four episodes. For this story size, six would have been better, or eight. But if you're going to do four, then yeah, I feel like it really should have been written more like a movie. The other big thing that I noticed is that at least in episode one, it feels like a lot of Curie's dialogue is cut. And as a result, a lot of her character isn't there. One of my biggest criticisms of Junji Ito manga is that he kind of just has this self-insert character over and over. They usually don't have like personalities.
They don't seem very perturbed by the insane shit that is happening.
Yeah, they don't seem perturbed enough, or I mean, they are really perturbed, but like they're indistinguishable from one another. Yes. You know, it's just sort of like every man,
there are a couple. I was reading Tomie, and there were a couple of times where I genuinely couldn't tell like which character I was following.
Yes,
I was like, which girl are you?
But at least in the event of Curie, I was reading this, I was like, oh, you know, like Shuichi is losing his shit over stuff with his dad, and she actually seems pretty like she doesn't buy into it at first. Like she comes up with like a lot of logical explanations for why the things that Shuichi says he's seeing are mundane and not necessarily indicative of like the town being cursed, at least in the like the first two chapters. Obviously that changes once things get really weird with Shuichi's mom and with Azami, but up to that point, and I didn't get that sense of her personality at all in the first episode.
That has me worried because again, I don't want to spoil the whole manga for people that haven't read it. It's good. It's worth reading. But in the manga, even though I think it's kind of clumsy and it comes too late, there are like, I think some interesting sort of kind of lore or story-based explanations for the way the townspeople are responding to all of this.
And
like why Curie acts the way that she does, especially like the middle chapters when there's like this really long stretch where it almost seems like she like regresses, you know, every like she'll end a chapter by going like, oh my God, this is such a crazy thing. And then the next chapter, it'll almost be like that.
Nothing happened.
That didn't just happen.
Yeah.
And then eventually we get to a point where that changes and the story like starts to do some interesting things. But you kind of need to have her kind of bland sort of, but consistent presence in the story for that to even work.
Yeah.
You know, because like if they tried to, you know, include that detail like in episode four, but we haven't had like several episodes of those sort of those little clues or hints, then it's just going to feel like a nothing detail. You know what I mean?
Curie is like lack of personality in these scenarios feels weird because her boyfriend is losing his shit and she just sort of seems kind of like she's observing him without like with a sense of detachment where that's not what's going on in the manga. She seems like intrigued or confused, or, you know, she's trying to offer solutions, or, you know, when he's worried about his dad and all these other sorts of things. And that's just kind of not there.
Yeah, she's just concerned enough for you to notice that she should be a lot more concerned. And that, like, again, that makes you, that sets up some stuff that happens in the manga. But to just have her act like, okay, well, whatever, like that just makes it seem like she's not even there, you know? Or that she truly is literally just there to be a character that can be around to see these things happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which Ito does sometimes, to be fair. Like he has stories where the only reason you have a protagonist is because someone needs to see this shit happen in order for there to be a story.
Yeah. Someone has to observe what's going on and just reiterate it to you and sort of it does call back to like some classic horror literature where you would just sort of have a person usually writing in their journal or something, like the journal setup.
Oh yeah, very common. Very gothic, like Dracula or the beginning of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I met this guy who told me the most whack out story I've ever heard in my life. Anyway.
Yeah. Here I was going to say turning of the screw even starts where a bunch of people are just sitting around a campfire and they're like, hey, it's Christmas. That's time for ghost stories. Let me tell you this ghost story. So, I mean, sometimes it Junji Ito's stories can kind of feel like that perspective, although it's more visual. The other thing I did want to point out is even though they've made these changes, I would say visually the composition is pretty close one for one.
Last screenshot you had up, like obviously if you put it side by side with the manga, you could see that it's not the same. But the fact that it's almost like when they remake old video games and the idea is to make it look like how it looks like in your head when you're remembering it. That's kind of what this anime I feel like is doing. Where even though it doesn't look like what the manga looks like one for one, when you watch it, your brain goes, yes, that's Junji Ito's art 100%.
I mean, there's definitely like some, as far as like where the camera is framing, that replicates the manga panels in a lot of areas. Like there's a part where Shuichi, in his fear of what's going on, climbs a tree, and then Kyrie comes into the park and is like, what are you doing up there? Sort of deal. That entire framing is like the same as the manga as far as like how much space he's taking up or whatever, but I do still want to say like visually it looks amazing. First episode contains the spiral smoke from the crematorium and the big face and everything, and it does that really well, and I think the music exemplifies it to a point where it
so could you tell were they using like CG rigs and like cell shading? Or did it seem more like it was like augmented? Like
I think there are some CG rigs going on, but it is not easy to discern. Hey. So there are some shots like where they have, you know, like it's like zoomed out pretty far and there's smaller characters moving in the background and stuff, where I could kind of tell those were CG rigs. It might be a bit of both, because I did remember noticing in the episode credits that it talks about like 2D animation direction and stuff too. So I think that they're interchanging it quite a lot.
It seems like they're maybe taking a lesson from Orange, because Orange does that too, where they will, you know, they will really, it's not like how a lot of studios will have certain things that are always going to be CG and then other things that are always going to be 2D.
Yeah.
Like horses, right? Yeah. Like the horses, those are just CG. We're not even bothering with those. But like with Orange in Trigun, you know, there were a lot of scenes where certain elements would be 2D or 3D, depending on what worked for the scene. And I think that's been a really successful way to handle it, because then I think your brain gets used to that mix a lot more than when there's just like a bunch of like 2D character models, but then a 3D car. And then you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Or vice versa, where it's like a bunch of 3D stuff, but then like, you know, there'll be like one like 2D element, or there'll be like a 2D insert shot. And it's like,
yeah, I guess that's most of my thoughts is on Uzumaki. Like I'm going to keep watching it. Like I said, I have trepidation about whether the way things play out story-wise will be satisfying, just because of how the first episode felt to watch. So we'll just have to see. For those of you who want to find out for yourselves, you can watch first episode of Uzumaki on September 28th, midnight. So technically the 29th on Adult Swim. Or if you have the streaming service Max, it will be up on Max, I think, the following day. I only watched the subtitled version, but I do have a copy of the dub that I do plan to check out when I have more time.
We need to ask DeMarco if we're going to get that soundtrack on vinyl with the spiral etched into the...
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, for that Halloween vibes.
Maybe get Junji Ito to do like a custom sleeve.
This is all sounding very, very tasty. And then next time he comes out of con, I want Junji Ito to sign my vinyl. Yes. Yeah. All right.
Mom, guys, that's William Street. That's money.
That's my money sitting on the table. Come on. Snap that up. All right. Are you ready to get into our double finale?
Ooh, yes, man. Let me tell you, heavy episodes, at least for Dead Dead Demons.
Yeah, Dead Dead Demons is heavy. Did you watch episode zero?
I did, thank God.
Okay, yes.
I would have been very confused.
Yes, shout out to Tyler from Crunchyroll who just emailed us and was like, you need to watch episode zero before you watch the finale. So thank you, Tyler. Yeah, so for those who have been watching Dead Dead Demon and haven't watched episode zero is basically episode seven, like 16 and a half. Like it just slots immediately into episode in between.
Episode 18 literally picks up a second after episode 17 ends.
Yes.
Like it's like truly, I am wondering what the hell it would have been like to have watched this show with episode zero being first. Because it really would have changed a lot for me.
Yeah. I'm glad. I told James this, you know, off camera, like after I watched it. I'm glad that we waited to watch episode zero. It probably would not have made a whole lot of sense at all if we had watched it first. So there's that. But also it includes a whole bunch of, maybe wouldn't have known, but it kind of includes a whole bunch of stuff like the alien face reveal, which that hit really hard when it finally happened late into the show when we finally saw their blue faces. So knowing that, like for the entire show, I don't think that would have been fun.
There were certain things like that where I was like, I'm really glad that did not get revealed in this way.
Yeah.
And because the way the episode zero ends, it does kind of lead into episode one, and that it's basically setting up like, here's how we got here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would have been so funny for the mystery of Kodode's dad to be completely solved from jump.
Yes.
The crazy thing is, we learn exactly what happened to him. It's kind of wild.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Would it like
just knowing in the background the whole time while she's upset and she's like, yeah, I haven't seen my dad. He disappeared that day. And we're like, yeah, it's okay. There's just an alien in his body, you know?
Yeah. And he's like having a whole other anime's worth of adventures.
In Osaka.
Yeah. And that, like, I kind of like that. I like that fitting in at the end of the show. I actually, one of the things I loved about this finale was the way that it became basically a completely different anime for about 25 minutes. It became like a post-apocalyptic mecha
war anime. Pilots.
Yeah, it became like Children of Men with like weird anime people. And so much of it was like, yeah, shit's gone down. It's been really bad. You've had like almost a decade's worth of adventures that we're just going to gloss right over and we're just moving right along. And I really respected that. And I don't think I would have gotten that sense of like, oh crap, like this really is a huge change in the status quo.
Yeah.
And the chat wondering, James is asking like, why did they even release episode zero like this? I think maybe it's like a tease for the fans that watched it in theaters.
Yeah, you know? Maybe for the a tease for fans who watched it in theaters, because I'm pretty sure it's 100% like new material wasn't included in the movie.
Yeah. Like, here's why you should rewatch it again over the course of 3 months.
We promise there's new stuff in here. Look, you know, that sort of thing. It's also, is that what's called media res, James? Where it's just sort of like dropping you in.
And
they were just
media res,
So I think that might also have been part of it, where they thought it would just generate a lot of like, intrigue kind of thing going into it for people who didn't see the movie. But it was a risky decision, I think.
Yeah.
Just in that, you know, the dropping proper nouns all over the place.
Yes.
People are getting capped, you know.
Well, we're like, we're seeing characters. And there are some things where, I was thinking, this might have been cool. Like, if I'd have known from the get-go that Shiri Gegege no Kitaro would become like the evil dictator of like ruined Earth or ruined Japan.
Oh yeah,
not dictator, but like the evil, like his role is weird.
And that's actually, his arc might be the one I was the most dissatisfied with post finale. So he, like you said, ends up trying to found this new movement. They're gonna rebuild Earth from the beginning. He's working with the HR lady, whose heel turn never quite made sense to me, as far as like her just sort of going with him. She's got control of the AI.
And also, was the lady that was with him that girl that got crushed by a building?
Yes.
With the reporter? Okay.
Yes.
So, all right, I guess.
She's all right, and she's got a gun now, you know.
That was another thing where I was like, there must have been something that got cut from the manga, or maybe not.
Yeah.
But that was like, why are you here?
Why are you here? Yeah. You know, and he's kind of going off on his evil dictator speech or whatever. And then he just gets lasered from space and they're all just wiped out.
As you do.
And I was like, I don't know if that's satisfying. I would have liked it more if Ova had managed to kill him up on the spaceship a while ago, and just that would have been more like fulfilling.
I didn't mind his death, just because I thought, again, I kind of liked the last episode of the show is like half of like a Gundam spinoff that you're just never going to get to see the rest of. And that sort of like the fact that the conflict just keeps going, even after kind of jumping around a bit, but even Nobuo, right? That's Kodote's dad, Nobuo.
Sure. I don't remember what his name is. It could be that.
That's his name. Kodote's dad, Mr. Kodote. Even after Mr. Kodote gets to shift over to the third timeline, that whole, like the whole storyline, I thought it was kind of bold that the whole plot line that they've been setting up of the AI and the inter-humanity battle that's now taking place in the ruins of Earth, that just gets completely unresolved.
I mean, like, it's still happening. It's still happening over there, because they basically just said, we're just sending your consciousness to the other timeline. But I mean, his body's still there. We don't actually know, like, is he just like kind of a vegetable then, if his consciousness is gone? I kind of thought
maybe it like disintegrated the body.
Maybe
it disintegrates it, and then your consciousness just pops over.
Yeah, or something. I don't.
But then again, we get a little hint at the end that things do turn out okay, or at least not the worst that they could.
Because they hear the disembodied voices, right? Yeah. And somehow drop off the
Isobayan.
Isobayan manga on a table somewhere. Yeah. So.
Okay, so just I want to lay out the order of events for the sake of my brain and for anyone that might be listening that hasn't watched the finale yet, which you shouldn't do. Watch the finale first. I thought it was great, even though there are a couple of shortcomings or like plot threads that maybe didn't get as much time as we would have liked. So Mr. Kodote wakes up in horrible post-apocalypse land that is the direct result of what we saw in episode 16, where the asterisks, the little pink bubbles, explode everyone, and Tokyo gets obliterated. And it seems like it really was kind of like a worldwide catastrophe, because we're fully in like The Last of Us, you know, dark times.
And the Fujin robots, which are being run, I think, by the Plankton AI. Correct me, manga readers, if I'm wrong. This part was a little unclear to me, but they're killing people. Yes. They're just, you know, killing people.
Yes.
So.
And we don't see them technically. But it's basically confirmed that Kodote and Oran are piloting Mecha to like battle against the evil AI robots.
Yeah.
And it's a whole thing. But Mr. Kodote is really only concerned about getting back to his daughter.
Yeah.
And it's kind of clear that in however this ended up happening, this is not going to be it. So thankfully, the hero of multiple universes, Makoto, the badass soldier and hero of many timelines, who is safe and alive, thank God, takes Mr. Kodote to the shift machine that's been
Mr. Kodote is so funny to me. I'm sorry, I don't know why.
I think his name is Nobuo, but I'm just going to call him Mr. Kodote because it's funny. They let him shift back over to the timeline to basically try to see if we can find a universe where everyone can be just happy without either Kodote going on a horrible mass killing spree or humanity being wiped out by aliens. And they managed to find like the nice balance between the two, where Kodote and Oran just get to grow up as regular girls. And, you know, Kodote ends up with her shitty teacher.
Yeah.
But but they did make a point that they did not start dating until 4 years before 16 years in the future. And if I'm doing my math right, it means that they at least still waited until she was out of school and he didn't start like macking on her when he was a student. Okay. Still not my thing, but you know what? They seem perfectly functional insofar as they don't seem that happy, but also they're living life, and who knows, maybe she'll
find. I mean, they Mr. end or Mrs. on Wright. Her talking with Oran, and she's like, I'm just really into his looks. I'm like, why? And then
she likes schlubs, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. But then otherwise mentions that he sucks, he's a jerk, and she should really find someone else. So she's at least aware.
And Oran is a lot more toned down. She's still a little weird. She's not as like shy and reserved as she was in Timeline A, but she's not as gooey. And completely and outside of like the typical social, you know, she's not screaming anarchy at the top of her lungs, right?
Right. Yeah. She's got a haircut, but her eyebrows are still there. And she's working as she kind of has the other lady's job.
Yeah.
She's a PR person for SES, but they haven't gotten into like weapons development. They're making the little robot companions.
All it takes is just that, you know, the one person to fail upwards and just the right trajectory to end the world, I guess.
Yeah.
And then funniest joke of the whole show, Kadode ends up, I guess, inventing Doraemon.
there's a different version of Isobayan, and it's now
it's like a radish. No, but did you notice that at the end, I got a screenshot of it at the end, because she was pitching her sci-fi adventure manga where, you know, the kids get to go on all these little adventures, maybe even travel through time. And she's trying to come up with names for it. And she's combining Oran's name with her nickname, Demon. And she's like, has all these ones written down, and like right in the middle, it's Doraemon. Yeah. That's going to be her big...
Notice the two N's, everybody. So legally distinct Doraemon. Yeah.
I just thought that was so funny because, you know, we clocked like way back in episode one that Isobayan is very clearly just a Doraemon.
Yeah, it's just Doraemon. But that was fun. Doraemon, right? Yeah.
But we do see that, like you said, whatever goes down in the alternate timeline, it seems like our girls end up okay.
Yeah.
And also Makoto, I'm just going to believe that in my heart.
Yes.
Because they, I guess, develop the better shifter technology that lets them like kind of interact a little bit with the other realities.
Yeah. Because they talk about that before they send Katode's dad over, is that like, hey, we're like actively trying to improve the shifter technology, so maybe we'll follow after you eventually. But I did think it was sweet that Makoto was like, everything I care about is still here, even in this, you know, messed up world. I'm not just gonna abandon all of it. So yeah,
hero of the show, truly
like the best character. But there's a point where Oran hears voices but no one else does, and that's when she finds the Isobayan manga just sitting on a table all of a sudden, which means it had to have come from another timeline, but we don't. So maybe they practice by trying to send an object over first.
What we specifically hear is Kadode saying like, be careful, because if you get too close the timeline will explode.
So. This warning. Who knows? I mean, again, maybe they make it more apparent in the manga, but also I want to give a quick shout out to Kadode's hair upgrade. Looks great.
I was a fan. Hell yeah. Get those highlights, girl.
Yeah. She's got much better. A green underlayer and then like green dip dye. Yeah.
Our girls are going to be okay.
Yeah. I kind of got the impression that her dad is dead by this point again, though. Maybe. I'm not sure, because she's a manga editor now, and she's talking to the artist that her dad worked for.
I didn't even think that. I just thought, you know, he's probably happy to chill after hopping universes and getting his body. Can we talk about, by the way, how creepy it is, the idea that he's walking around with a dead alien corpse just hanging out inside of his skin? That's like hardcore. That's hardcore.
I don't know exactly how that works anatomically.
Nope, me neither.
Because it's like he died and the alien took over his bodies, like just like what happened with Oban, and then the alien died and his consciousness came back into the body and he can move it and control it. Like, is the alien not just wearing a skin suit then?
I mean, it literally looks like a skin suit.
Yeah.
You peel it back and he's there.
Yeah.
But I guess not. Yeah. I don't know how that works.
Maybe it's not important. I don't know. But yeah, weird if there's just a corpse in there.
It was nice of him to leave that note, though, to say, like, hey, I'm sorry about stealing your life.
Oh, yeah. So in episode zero, when he comes to, there's like a note. Is it like just in his coat pocket or something?
Is it on the phone?
Maybe it's in his notes app or something. I don't know. Something. And it's just like, hey, sorry, I've been living in your body for the past 8 years. I'm an alien. Yeah.
Don't know where your family is. I have been keeping an ear out, but you know, things are kind of wild.
Things are kind of wild. Good luck. And what killed the alien? Do we know?
He said, like, ever since the one girl died, mm-hmm. implied that she went out to get exploded by the asterisks.
Yeah.
That, like, after she disappeared, he just kind of, like, it said that he could just, like, sense that he was gonna die. And I don't know if it was, like, a, like, lost the will to live, or if
we also don't know the lifespan of these aliens either, especially in, like, Earth conditions or in general. So, I mean, it was living in him for, like, 8-ish years on mm-hmm. top of however long it had lived before that. So,
and he wasn't exactly in, like, the freshest model body either.
No, he looked pretty bad, like, for this entire episode zero.
Just the psoriasis had already begun to sit in, and the definitely arthritis. Was not getting for making manga,
so
that guy has the knuckles of a 90-year-old man, I'm sure.
with the end of Dead Demon City Destruction, James, where are you still thinking this is anime of the year quality?
Yes, I am. Absolutely. Yeah. I think the ending for me was not in any way disappointing.
Yeah.
I think it did a difficult thing that not a lot of stories get enough credit for doing, which is that it ended in a satisfying way without feeling the need to, like, completely blow your mind or, you know, give it, like, a big last minute twist. It kind of, like, it almost landed the plane.
Yeah. And, yes. You know,
not a lot of shows get credit for just landing the plane. That's hard to do. It's really easy to screw up in the last act, especially for how wild things got.
Yeah.
The fact that it was able to, like, execute on, like, a complete genre tone setting shift for half of one finale, I think that was really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you? Oh, before we move on, I did want to mention, we don't have a screenshot of this. When he time shifts, like, I kind of get the impression that, okay, so whatever the finger thing was that, like, came out and, like, he went to wherever those exist at, I think, before he got into the next timeline. Because there's a part where there's a whole bunch of them just sort of, like, but they're smaller, all hanging around it. Also, when they're on their way, everything's purplish pink, right? And they're on their way to the shifting machine. There's that weird shot where, like, Makoto was huge. And he's tiny.
It seemed like kind of like an impressionistic, like, transition shot. But I did notice that. I was like, that's him. Because the show doesn't do that a lot. We don't get a lot of those, like, very cinematic kind of in. It was like an in-camera, not an in-camera, but it was the kind of thing where it would be like a, not a split diopter, but it would be like, if it were live action film, it would be like two shots being layered on top of each other, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And we just, we didn't get a lot of that in the show. So I thought that was, like, an interesting, like,
matter. Yeah. So when that happened, I was like, why is this getting, I thought it was getting, like, mind fucky on me.
Yeah.
Like, well, he hasn't gotten in the machine yet.
Like, yeah, it usually is like, we're going to start getting all abstract and, like, doodly doo. But
yeah.
But no.
No.
I think maybe they just wanted to highlight how badass Makoto is.
Possibly. One last time. Larger than life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, this is definitely, like, way up there in anime of the year. Top contender, or at least, like, top five, for sure. Just not sure, like, where it'll fall in. I enjoyed the ending. Not a single character did I dislike, but that's not true, because there were the villains. Everyone I was supposed to dislike, I did. There were some characters that were complicated enough where, like, you end up with kind of mixed feelings about them. Really loved the core group, and glad to see that they all got to stay together. Riho, the girl who got crushed, also lives. We see her in the ending as well.
The reporter lady?
No, but the girl who got crushed before that. Their classmate.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's
Yeah.
I think really my only, like, the only major criticisms I have are, I wish we'd gotten, like, one episode about the PR lady.
Yeah.
If we got, like, one focus episode on her, I think that would have tied it all together really nicely.
Yeah. Like, if I were to kind of extrapolate based on what we saw, is that maybe she's just a person who, for whatever reason, is attracted to men in power. And so once the SES guy was dead, she just hopped onto the next dude who looks like he was going to have the most power and be in control, which was, and she doesn't really kind of amoral about who's doing what. Well, I mean, both of them were doing crap, like shitty stuff to start with, right? Not really a beacon of morality anyway. So, yeah, that's
I like that the soldier guy made friends with Ota.
Oba.
Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering if that was him, but because he's the one who rescues him in the helicopter. And then when
he's apparently been keeping him safe for like the last.
Yeah. They've just been hanging out and glad that, you know, he was able to save someone and then maybe hide out instead of continuing to kill aliens and stuff. So yeah, great show. But next we got to talk about another really, really good show. I'll start by saying I support women's wrongs, which is what most
A lot of women's wrongs in this.
There's a lot of women's wrongs in this.
I would like to walk back a little bit of my dunking that I gave to Kome's father.
Okay.
Who is not the completely boneheaded moron that we necessarily thought he was. He's still an idiot.
We were really mean to him last week. We were really mean to him last week.
Well, because the story he told
about himself. He still bought a dried up well without looking at it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But the story he told about himself was not very flattering because his story was, oh yeah, voice in the well. Sure. Let's go for it. Let's do it. No problem. Yeah. And again, that moment when he said, that is when I realized it wasn't a god, but an evil monkey. At least now we know that he was being he was a weak man.
Yes.
And he was being prodded on both sides by two different kinds of monster, you could say. Yeah.
So we find out that Kome's mom, whose name is Hatsune, easy to remember, no relation to the Miku, but easy to remember for that reason.
So I'm sure an evil bird Miku with all the different varietals of Miku we've been getting. Let's get evil bird Miku in here.
Evil bird Miku. Sorry, this line also just cracks me up. Think of poor Kome with two murderers for parents, he said.
Which is the exact kind of idiot thing he would say. Like, you know what? I'll spare her the indignity of knowing that her mom also sucks.
Yeah, really.
Where do you think that's going to go, bud?
Yeah.
How do you think this is going to end?
So Kome's mom, you know, though, like her evilness. It comes from a real place.
It's hard out there.
It is. And she kind of, she trauma dumps a little bit on poor Kome here after Kome confronts her. And she's like, my dad sold me into sex work at 13 because he had like debt and was drinking all the money, and he just continued to do that. No one ever helped me, so I had to help myself. And as a result, she became conniving and started killing people. Throwing girls down wells. I mean, there's a moment where she's vulnerable, where she's like, I was so happy when I married Jihei, which is Kome's dad, because I thought I was going to be happy. And like, she's strangling her daughter at the same time. And then she starts crying because she's like, why am I like this? And I was like, oh no.
I know.
No, I actually feel for her a little bit.
She was, for lack of a better word, a very human villain or a very bird villain. I don't know what they would say for that, but yeah, she wasn't just like a cartoon character.
Yeah.
I got the impression, and this is what I liked about her, that even her, like, you know, what's the name of the archetype?
Ojo-san?
Yes.
Or Ojo-sama? Yeah.
Yeah. Even that, to me, I feel like that's her defense mechanism.
Yes. She's
putting on the role of the queen bitch so that she can live with her decisions. But obviously, she doesn't love being evil.
No, I mean, yes, she definitely has built up a huge, like, wall and facade. Because when we first see her, we're like, oh, she's vain. And we're thinking, you know, all of her motivations are greed and vanity. She's surrounded by all these expensive kimono that she's purchased with her human bone drug money. And, you know, she's checking her face and fixing her makeup. And you're just like, oh, okay. And that's a villain you've seen a million times, whether it's like a bullying teenage girl or just like an evil queen, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's not really until, you know, her and Kome play off each other a little bit. Like, Kome appeals to her ego a bit by making it seem like, oh, I'm not judging you. Just, you know, you want me to keep my mouth shut. Just give me some money. Like, she basically blackmails her. She feels like, she appears to blackmail her, and that's her mom.
She knows her mom will respect that.
Yes, right.
Which again, I love that. I love that she's like, "Hell yeah, girl! I'll let you blackmail me. Thank God."
Yeah,
like,
yeah. You take right after me. Obviously, you know, you're a smart woman who's making the best out of a horrible situation. Yeah, I'll And so she was going to give her some expensive kimono that she could probably like sell or something for cash. But Kome can't really keep up the facade very long. And she, you know, basically denies her. She's like, you're not my mother. I only had one parent. Only my dad was my parent. And that's, you know, when she, Hatsune snaps and starts choking her out.
After she kicks her mom in the crotch.
They like beat quite a bit, you know.
I was like, oh damn.
Meter and all that other kind of stuff, and
right in the cloaca.
James, you can't just say right in the cloaca.
I think that's how it works, though.
We're not getting into the egg question again, you know.
The egg question until this show ends. Mm-hmm. I will be asking the egg question because it demands to be. It demands to be asked.
So Yukiya comes to the rescue.
I need these two to get married.
I know.
So, like, I need them. This the moment when she was like, I knew you'd come for me because
you don't trust me.
Guilty.
Yeah.
And then I was like, they need to be married right now. This is it. This is like their destiny.
Yeah.
I ship it 1,000%.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same dynamic as the prince and Hamayu, where it's like, you're the only one that can trust me because you're the only one that like accepts how stupid I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Hamayu got some good screen time in this too. Yes. So like kind of speed running a little bit, you know, this happens, and then Hatsune's current boyfriend shows up and he's been doing drugs, you know. Because she's supplying him, and he turns into an evil crow, and the prince is there and everything, and he manages briefly to, you know, just knock him out with the butt of his sword, and then
not kill him, which is actually
not kill him, and that's important to know, because my first takeaway is because Yukiya compares it to the stuff with the monkeys, and then he doesn't kill him. I'm like, oh, but you're okay killing the monkeys. It was a little like with the kids earlier and everything. Like,
you murdered those children. We haven't forgotten that.
We'll never forget. No. So that happens, but then Hatsune pulls the hair. Her hairpin had fallen out of her hair, and I knew she was going to do something with that hairpin because there was like a shot, like a little bit earlier, that kind of drew your attention to it, and I was like, she's stabbing somebody with that.
I still gasped though. I was still like, oh shit, no.
So I mean, she gets him right in the back. Like, it's not a kidney shot. So I was like, he's.
But this is olden times. You could die from like a paper cut.
Do they have bacterial infections? Do they have staph in the world of Yatagarasu? I don't.
They have to. I mean,
humans have it, so I mean, why wouldn't they have it? You know, and
no
so
one's washing their hands, like they're not,
or their wings, or whatever. Their wings,
right? They don't have bird dove hanging out in the corner, like
their little wash basin or whatever. So I mean, then he. Did you think of a pun?
No, I thought of a question that a part of me needs to ask in order to just exercise it from my soul. But I hate that I thought of it, and I hate that it's even something that is living in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
But now I need to ask. Okay, you know how like in olden times they didn't have toilet paper, right?
Yeah.
You know how they can like turn their hands into feathers. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's how they handle their business?
Do I think they wipe their actual poop off onto their feathers and then
instead of their human? Well, because I mean, that's what they used to do.
Like, back to their hands, the poop is gone. Like they'd still have poop all over their hands.
Well, maybe they just molt. I don't because back in the day, that's what you did. That's you used your molted? Hands. No, people used their hands.
I think they used big leaves
sometimes, but sometimes they didn't. Sometimes they used old sticks and stuff.
How do you know?
I've read articles.
Wandering Dream says, James, you know that people used things before toilet paper, right?
I am fully aware, yes, that people have been finding things with which to clean themselves since time immemorial.
Are you talking about like a time before fabric existed? Because couldn't you poop towel?
No, I'm just saying.
That you washed, that, like a wash rag.
In Rome, they shared a sponge, which is awful.
Okay.
A communal sponge, like when you go to a gas station and clean this.
People wonder why folks only lived like 35.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is if you had a wing hand, would that not be preferable to like a regular hand? Because you could like molt off all the feathers and then that's less germs? I don't know.
I think this is just what...
They use shells in Demolition Man?
I think this is just what you would do in this scenario.
No, I would invent toilet paper if I was me.
You were in the world of Yatagarasu, would you use your feathered hand to wipe your butt?
I don't know. I mean, I don't even know how that works for them. I wouldn't
You're considering it a lot, so I'm just wondering, like, maybe that's just what you would do.
No, if you had the ability to do that. I was thinking about how one of the things I was always told was that one of the reasons it used to be taboo to, like, eat with certain hands is because that one of your hands was, like, the hand that you, you know, clean your business with.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, you know, you were only supposed to eat, like, especially if it was, like, a communal thing, right?
So yeah,
I'm not crazy. I'm not making stuff up here.
Yeah. I guess I never imagined they, like, literally use that hand. I thought that hand was just considered dirty because even if you had, like I said, a poop towel
that makes more sense, it was still the
one you always were using. But
yeah, and it's true.
Dreams, the left hand was, yeah, the ass wiping hand. Yeah.
True. Feathers are hard to clean. That's also true.
Yeah.
I'm just not a smart man, you guys. I shouldn't be.
Shouldn't even be on this show.
Yeah. No, I shouldn't. I don't know how I scammed my way on here to begin with. Now you're stuck with me.
PKMNJ fans says, do they even have toilets in Yatagarasu? Wouldn't they use small statures?
I assume they just have the holes.
Are we talking about?
No. You know the what are they called in Japan? The little.
Oh, in the ground, pits. The ones. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
So most people had back then.
Yeah. I mean, if they always transform into a bird.
Now, that's what I would do. I wouldn't even bother wiping. I would just go into the air and just.
Gonna hit somebody.
Yes.
No.
I would do that if I was a bird.
If I had that power,
I would do that. My enemies, I would find my enemies.
You just poop on their house. Yes. Giant bird poop on their house.
I have read that some bird that maybe even crows, because crows hold grudges. I've read that some birds aim, like they try to hit things.
Yeah.
So yeah. I would do that.
Okay. You have that right, I suppose. I don't remember where we are. Oh, okay. So we were talking about the prince getting shanked.
Yeah.
Before
and whether or not he would get a horrible infection from that.
Whether or not he would get a horrible infection. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, he gets shanked and everyone's, you know, on eggshells about whether he's going to make it or not from getting stabbed. Eggshells.
I don't think you can say that. I think that's offensive to them. Walking on eggshells. That's a pretty messed up thing to say to a dying bird and their
amusement. Anyway, okay. And so next came, like, my favorite scene, though, which was Natsuka confronting Hatsune about her crimes.
Because, yeah, no, that was great.
Yeah.
My favorite line of the whole episode, I think.
Yeah. Where
she's the monkeys told the truth and they paid up.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? You're goddamn right, honey. Like, that's true.
That probably it means a lot when you've lived the kind of life that she has. Because he tries to kind of shame her. He's like, you were sacrificing innocent people around you. And she's like, no one ever helped me. You guys are the government. You know, you're supposed to love every Yatagarasu. We find out that the prince literally can't kill other Yatagarasu as the Kinu. Like, that's one of his things.
Well, and that's such a great contrast, right? Like, we get that bit of, like, he has to love every Yatagarasu. He has to treat them all with love. But then at the same time, you have these people that are clearly falling through the cracks.
Yeah.
So, like, when they're constantly bringing up how the society is going to crumble, there's a lot of talk of whether it's going to come from outside, from, you know, the barrier falling.
Yeah. But,
I mean, there are plenty of signs that, like, things aren't going great to begin with.
Yeah. I don't know that we ever really see currency in this. So I'm wondering if, like, access to things is just very much caste system.
Kind of, I can see that.
You know?
Well, I mean, you know, with all the Hill Raven prejudice and stuff that we got in the last season.
Exactly. So in a way, even though she was evil, I kind of, like, I respected her in a certain kind of way, just for, like, I don't know.
And she's better than Asabi, right? Like, she's not.
Yes.
Know, she's not, like.
What do you think she's doing?
I would love it if she, like, again, I'm just imagining wheeling her in, like, Hannibal Lecter for a story arc where it's like, we need to get into the head of a completely deranged person. There's only one bird we know that can tell us what a criminal like this might be thinking.
Yeah.
She's like, she's playing her little lute.
Yeah, she's playing, like, her her instrument and everything. Yeah.
Good to see you, Prince.
Yeah. So we don't have a screenshot of it, but how bad did you feel for Sumio?
Oh, man, that poor boy.
He's got his crying in the rain scene. Oh, no, we do have a screenshot. It just looks very dark. So, you know, after the prince is shanked, Sumio blames himself because, you know, they left without him, which is what they always do, is he always leaves him behind and let his bodyguard come with him. And then he gets shanked, and Sumio is just like, he's apologizing here to Hamayu, who's very upset. But I liked it because she punched him. She's like, there, you've been punished. Don't think about it.
For his own good, right? Like, okay, right. Like, all right, don't go, like, you know, don't go committing seppuku or anything
out of dishonor or anything like that. Yeah, yeah. And also, she just always looks cool, so.
Yeah, she's so fucking cool. She's so cool.
Yeah.
I want her to like just tell me that I'm kind of like interesting, or like laugh at a story that I tell
or something.
Yeah, just so I can like feel like, see guys, like,
yeah,
come on, she,
yeah,
but
I'm, yeah, cool. I felt really bad for you know, just Sumio's feelings of failure. So when the prince comes through though, and they're all gathered around his bed, you know, like Hami's holding his hand and Yukia's, you know, thanking God while sitting outside, but it's Sumio who kind of does the Samwise to Frodo bit, where he's just like elated that he made it. I think he's the only character who refers to the prince by his like given name consistently too. Maybe his brother does, but it's like,
you, I think Hamayu maybe calls him like
Natsuko Hiko or whatever. Yeah.
Yes. We hear it so rarely that I still honestly have trouble remembering it sometimes.
Yeah.
I just think it was the prince. I would love for him to get like his own little, I'm imagining like a side story where he has to do like a noir style like investigation while the prince is out doing something and he's just like, ah.
Oh yeah, like a Sumio side story. Yeah.
Why is it always Sumio that they're picking on? Everyone's always dunking on Sumio.
Poor Sumio, yeah.
Yukiya is like the favorite and everyone loves him, and Sumio is just here, same as always.
How did you feel about the closeout? Where
I thought it was great. I loved it. I thought it was really cool that Yukiya like embraced what everyone already knew, where it's like, yeah, you realize that you're the prince's like top dog, right? Like, you know that? Like, he picked you, and that's your fate. And earlier in the season, we were laughing at how he's just trying to live his life, and everyone's like, "No, Yuki will go. He'll take care of it." And he's like, what are you talking about?
He's like, "Leave me out of all this crazy crap."
But now he realizes that, you know what? There are some things that are worth, you know, sacrificing your own, you know, time and your own even autonomy really for, or your own vision for your future. And no, I love it.
Yeah, he sees like standing next to the prince and protecting him as an extension of protecting his home. And so while they don't know exactly how this downfall will necessarily happen, if it's going to, again, be due to the barrier or due to like internal problems, I thought that part was really sweet. I really liked it.
And then did you dig the shot of the real world that we got? Like the veil between worlds kind of dimming?
Oh yeah, the when we actually see the lights for what they are, where they're not like sort of these will-o-wisp looking things, but they're actually like, you know, it's like skyscrapers and stuff. It was like, it's modern Tokyo or something right over there.
Right over there.
Wandering Dream says, I laughed so hard when y'all mentioned a few weeks back, oh, maybe modern day Japan will come up in volume 5, because the real premise of volume 5 is about a girl in modern day Japan.
I mean, we know it has to happen, right? Like, you can't bring this up and not pay off on it somehow.
Yeah.
So I figured that, like, I thought maybe Yukio is going to get, like, isekai'd into Japan.
Have to go over there and go deep undercover or something like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What if they have to go deep undercover? Wandering Dreamer, do they have to go deep undercover, or do we have to wait for possibly like 2 more seasons to?
We got like a preview at the end of this episode, so that makes me think that maybe we're gonna.
I mean, I was really hoping they would just straight up announce it, but I feel like it's not an impossibility. You know, in the end, this was great self-contained. It's not like they leave it off on a big cliffhanger as far as like, oh yeah, destruction's coming by or anything like that, but.
Apparently, it seems like the next story takes place at, like, a school.
Yes, because he officially takes on becoming a guard, so now he's got to go to
guard
school. And I think, I didn't really recall the redheaded guy who freaks out that he's there, but I'm assuming he's someone from, like, early season 1 from the sword fighting.
That's it. I thought that he was one of those guys that, like, he got into a fight with.
Yeah.
To the palace or something.
Okay.
And if not, some other douchebag that Yukiya has to put in his place.
Yeah. What else do they kind of leave up there?
The monkeys are still out there. Like that, the monkeys that problem are all just solved.
that issue is not solved. They've obviously got a tunnel system and sliding doors that they can, you know, kind of creep through to get into various areas. So
that's... How do you feel this second arc compared to the first one?
I mean, they're very different. Obviously, I really liked the first arc. Got to do a lot of sleuthing with that one and kind of like putting stuff together and all of that. I did still overall, I may have liked this arc just a bit more because we spent more time with Yukiya and the prince and got to see them interact. There was still, you know, a fair amount of sleuthing and it just expanded on the world.
Yes.
Even more. So
I like the horror vibes, like the supernatural horror angle of it.
Yeah.
That we got like almost nothing of in the first one. Like there's nothing in that first season that made me think that this would ever become about like creepy flesh eating monsters that live underground.
Right. No, yeah. The first arc is more like an Agatha Christie
sort of
approach. And the second one is definitely more of a like supernatural horror. Not quite it's not a procedural. But it did feel a little bit
it reminded me of Undead Girl Murder Farce a bit.
Where it's yeah.
Like, you know, people are dying. We got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Just made me realize that I need a Benoit Blanc Yatagarasu crossover right now. The Gilded Cage, call it like the Gilded Cage or something like that.
I need to find the right like fan artist to just commission that, commission that kind of crossover. Cause that's amazing. That idea needs to like really exist. So which finale did you prefer?
The first one.
The first one.
Only because two reasons. One, this finale is more straightforward, which I don't think makes it bad. Like I said, landing the plane, hard to do.
Yeah.
But it just lacked that oh crap factor that first finale had, where there was like eight different mic drops at the same time. Also the one criticism I really have about this finale and kind of the second arc a little more in general is that I thought the art was not as strong. I thought there were a couple parts in this episode where especially the characters looking off model to the point where I thought it was a little distracting.
Like
this looks like it could have used another pass or it maybe got rushed through, and that's something that could maybe be fixed for like home release. But
Tsumiya looked great in every shot he was in. That's all I really...
Of course. Yeah. Well, and Kome's mom looked pretty pretty great too. But the way that they handled the transformation scene and all of the gorgeous like moving camera shots of the kind of finale of the prince breaking down the mystery and everything.
Mm-hmm.
As from a directorial angle, I think that's the strongest the show's ever been.
Yeah, it is definitely hard to beat that. I mean, I felt like as far as what looked great in this episode, again, I think whoever is working on the shots of Tsumiya, I think really likes him because I never saw him look bad in this episode.
No.
And then the stuff where he's interacting with Hamayu looked great. And I always liked the archery scenes because the wisteria kind of branches and stuff are really beautiful as a backdrop. I think that's the plant that it is. But I do think arc one's finale was stronger, but I think I may have overall enjoyed the journey of arc two a little bit more, but it's pretty close. I feel like I'm splitting hairs.
I think arc two to me is the kind of like movie or the kind of book I would really love to reread and rewatch. Like, multiple times just because the vibes, like it's a perfect like Halloween little like mini series, I think. Whereas I would be curious to see how much of the impact of season one is maybe dulled a bit just by knowing how it all plays out.
That's possible too.
Whereas with this one, like it's not that kind of mystery, right? Like no one's gonna guess the evil underground monkey drug ring, like you know, that's not what the show is doing in this book. Or in this arc. And so I could see that being just an easier, like, I really want to hang out with the Prince of Yukiya again. Season two of Yatagarasu.
I agree. Of Dead Demon and Yatagarasu, which finale did you like more?
Yatagarasu season two?
Yes.
Dead Demons.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think so. Just because it was, I think emotionally, I think just because it was an emotionally hit a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is much more like, all right, this story's done. Now it's kind of on to the next one. But, you know, the Dead Demons was such a powerful, like, conclusion to me that it, at least in the the current moment, it's sticking out, I think, as a bit stronger.
I feel like I could say the exact same thing you said, but I would switch the series. So okay. Again, it's just like a little bit the same. I mean, Yatagarasu or Dead Dead Demon ended in a way that I agree was like very satisfying. We got our happy ending with the characters. Everyone's going to be okay, you know, and I'm glad that Kadode and Ouran get to continue their friendship plus a little extra, you know, into the future for sure. I guess Yatagarasu wasn't as clean of an ending because there is more, but I think I really liked the knighting scene with the prince and Yukia. And that I felt like that was a really good payoff for like the entire series. So yeah.
I can see why they chose to make sure to get the second book in there.
Yeah.
Because otherwise Yukia, you know, Yukia's role in season one was still very much as like the kind of perspective character that just doesn't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
And this really made Yukia feel like like the protagonist of the story. Like,
yeah.
One that we are going to be like really, I think, standing behind.
Yeah. He had a lot of growth over the course of the series. If you think of like where he started at the beginning, where he's putting on like this facade of incapability and whatnot, just to like, in part because of his, what goes on around his birth and with his parents.
Yeah.
So he's just, you know, pretending to be incompetent to a degree, even though he's not. So he has to like find this confidence in himself.
He keeps telling the prince, like, I'm only here for the season. Like, I don't care about this. I don't care about you.
Yeah.
I want to do my job and go home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, so over the course of the entire series, he has to come to terms with like his own birth circumstances. Like he had all those confrontations about mid season two, I think. So we have all of that going on, and then him like committing to the prince and him, you know, just like basically coming into an adulthood and realizing like he cares about people and they're important to him. Also learning to keep his skepticism in check, like, because it led him astray with Kome. He thought her vibes were off, but really he was just overdoing it. So,
I mean, to be fair, Kome's mother did definitely not make it too hard for Yukia to be like, well, there's only one girl I know that looks like the description of the drug peddler.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You were with your dad at these times. But you're right.
He was suspicious of her early on too. Like when she first moved in, he was like, I don't know. You were in a box and that's weird.
That is weird. And again, his last major interaction with like any slightly suspicious women ended in horrifying catastrophe.
That's true.
So it's like, I can't blame him for being like, I feel like any stranger of any kind, I'm just going to automatically assume is secretly a serial killer or something.
Yeah. Or, you know, just conniving and out for themselves sort of thing. Right. Well, that wraps up our summer shows. Tomorrow we'll be back for the trailer watch party. I've got the playlist made. I've got the notes made. We're looking at 61 trailers.
Is it sad that I'm just happy with anything under 70? I'm like, stop.
Yeah. I'll take 61. I can do that. Yeah. I can do 61. Yeah. So tune in tomorrow. We'll be here at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern to watch all of the fall 2024 anime trailers. You'll find your next new big show. Although, as we've mentioned numerous times, Dandadan is in there. So, but there's other stuff. Also, if you head over to Anime News Network tomorrow morning, as in Wednesday morning, our most anticipated for the year will also be up there, so you can kind of see what everyone's really looking forward to. Spoiler, we talked about one of those shows today. So that about wraps it up. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, everybody.
See you tomorrow. Bye.
The ANN After Show is an official podcast of Anime News Network. You can hang out with us live on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitter. Listen to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The ANN After Show is hosted by Lindsay Loveridge and James Beckett and is produced by Lindsay Loveridge. This episode was edited by Ron Lyons Jr. This episode of the ANN After Show is dedicated to Nicholas Dupree.